Hey, Brandon.
Hello, Alan.
The Not a Thing podcast is back. It's really back. Episode 145. We've been away for just a little bit of time, or if you're listening to these, marathoning them ahead of our 200th episode, then we weren't gone for very long at all, really.
I think this is our longest hiatus in over 2 years of recording.
Yeah. Yeah, it ended up being like a 2 week gap. Life finds a way.
Life happens.
Life finds a way.
Lifestyle finds a way to screw up your recording.
But we have a jam-packed show, so we should jump in and just
Quit talking, Alan. We have to
all
talk.
The things. We want to thank all the listeners that are still with us, still happy to hear our show, still happy to be on the show. Hopefully, we will be looking for you in the near future.
We appreciate your tweets.
Even the slightly asshole-ish requests for our show. So what do we got, Brandon? I know you went to a city council meeting in the interim.
Yes, it was another excursion on behalf of my exploratory committee to run for a state or local office. That committee may soon be reaching its end point.
Oh, no.
I've now gone to my second city council meeting, and that shit is ridiculous. Now, I do have the advantage of living in Sebastopol, California, a liberal bastion in Northern California, where you can, in the public comment section, which is really, I recommend you go. I know for a fact that this happens not just in my city, because I did some follow-up research after the meeting I went to. There was a gentleman talking about chemtrails and how the government is out to get us. There was a collection of 9/11 truthers.
Wow.
Who put 9/11 on the backs of Willie Brown and Ken Lay of Enron. You're allotted 3 minutes to speak, and they took turns reading from the same document so that they could read the whole thing. It took 12 minutes to read.
Wow.
And the other interesting person was someone speaking about targeted individuals. This is a worldwide phenomenon that is now really causing problems for the city of Richmond, because there's a city councilor in Richmond who acknowledged it and said it's something they need to be concerned about. And now the Richmond Police Department is getting flooded with calls from all over the world of people being targeted by space-based weapons that cause physical, emotional, and sexual trauma.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So I had actually seen a copy of the letter that was written by the city councilor before I went to this meeting. So when someone started to read the letter, I freaked out a little bit with joy. And this actually took me down an internet rabbit hole last week with a friend of the podcast, Skylar. We were watching video from the Richmond City Council where they were debating the topic.
Oh my gosh.
It was comedy gold. I check it out. It's worth your time. I mean, it's city boring stuff, but the things that the First Amendment grants people is pretty amazing.
Wow. Well, we'll definitely have a link to that and in the show notes. That should be some fun reading when you're not listening to the podcast. I think it would be difficult to listen to the podcast and then read those notes. Would you say that those have to be read kind of in a vacuum?
I would expect so. They were clearly thought up in a vacuum, so I would expect.
Well, the UK government is apparently living in a vacuum because they just released some rulemaking which makes it they removed some sections of an existing law, and one of the results of this is that if you're in the UK, you can't rip your own audio CDs anymore. So audio CDs that you buy, you can't rip them to MP3s. Now, What are audio CDs, you may ask?
I don't know if anyone that young listens to the podcast. I think everyone here has experience with CDs.
Yeah. Well, in any case, ripping your own CDs has been or was contentious in like the 90s, I think.
The 1990s. You got a CD burner, man. That's awesome.
Right. I don't even have an optical drive in my current computer.
It's because you have a Mac.
Yeah. Yeah.
they don't want things like optical drives or Ethernet cords or things that people would find useful.
They are a little annoying.
They moved beyond that.
They found different ways to annoy you.
Yeah, to sell you their own brand of thing that you have to buy.
But it just goes to show that the copyright laws, and we've talked about this in the past, the copyright laws and protections seriously need to be overhauled. If we're still talking about ripping audio CDs in 2015, that probably has to at least catch up with like the turn of the century.
Well, we're not talking about it. It's the High Court of the UK. So those tea sippers can do whatever they want.
Well, speaking of doing whatever they want or not doing whatever they want, we've talked about self-driving cars in the past, and there was an interesting story, kind of a debate that got pulled up about the rules that you give a self-driving car. We're generally at the podcast kind of anti-AI in a lot of things, or at least things that determine kind of life and death. Interestingly, self-driving cars we're mostly fans of, just for the sake of not having to deal with a lot of the road rage and general boredom that occurs in cars. But one story that came out last week was about what do you do, or what does the self-driving car do if it has to decide? Let's say bus has skewed into the wrong lane because its self-driving mechanism has malfunctioned. And it's on a track, and it's obviously very fast and heavy, so it's hard for it to turn. But your nimble little car can turn very fast, and it's in the correct lane. It's in the proper lane of traffic. But the cars, your car and the bus are careening toward each other. Should your car be programmed to turn itself off the bridge and dump you into the river? In order to save the lives of everyone on the bus.
Well, this really comes down to, are these AIs going to be built with Asimov's three laws of robotics? As we all know, the first law of robotics is a robot may not injure a human being through action or inaction.
Yeah. Yeah, the problem with Asimov's laws of robotics, as everyone who has read any of Asimov's books, is that they always go horribly wrong in the favor of humans. Somehow, some crazy exception has happened.
Well, no, the laws work. It's when something breaks in the laws or in the robot, so it doesn't properly recognize the laws, that problems ensue.
Well, the other piece of it is that programming such laws is, at least for now, still beyond the reach of programmers. But the ability to reason and determine and weigh that decision and be like, well, there's one person in this car and 50 people in that bus. What has more value, and having that decision being made? I'm not sure I'm okay with having that robot make that decision.
It's fine for a Vulcan, but not for a robot.
But sometimes the needs of the few do outweigh the needs of the many.
Yeah, it depends on who the few are.
Yeah. I think the thing for me is, in a completely autonomous system, You know, it just shows accidents will still happen. There will still be things that break, and how it makes that decision or not is gonna be up to computers. So it probably needs a little further explanation and looking. Although I would hope that it wouldn't like completely just decide, all right, your number's up, and then pitch you into the river, as I was saying in the example. I would hope it would at least try to like squeeze by the other car, or otherwise, you know, possibly not kill you in the process. I don't know how the simulators how much, you know, CPU crunching it would take to kind of figure out the least amount of damage that it would do or something. I would think that the car's computer and the bus's computer could talk to each other to kind of figure out some way to not kill anybody.
Yeah, if that's really going to work, it's going to need to be some sort of centralized system.
Yeah.
You can't have individual cars making decisions.
Yeah, because just like individual people making decisions, they could make decisions that end up being worse.
Yeah, then we might as well just be driving freaking cars.
Right.
Unless you're going to have some central hub running everything, which I am not a fan of. There's really no point.
Well, hopefully that these cars and buses on bridges are driving on bridges that are 3D printed. There's an interesting story out of the Netherlands. A Dutch artist is 3D printing a bridge, and it's not... He's not 3D printing it in like a plastic, extruded plastic way or anything. It's actually metal. And so...
Yeah, it's not made in China.
So he's built robots that will... They essentially will make very fine wires by melting metal down and then depositing that wire in a structure. And then it's made to continuously reinforce that structure, and they've figured out a way to build this so everything interlaces and properly builds. And so he's setting up robots on, I think it's both sides of a canal, and then they're going to build the bridge toward each other, and then I don't know if it's actually going to complete the bridge or if it will just bring them really close to another, and then they'll like spot weld it together, because the example in the video does seem to be it wouldn't finish the bridge. It would like it essentially can extend the bridge as far as it wants, but if you want to actually have it connect to something, someone has to do that final join. But it's an interesting project in that, you know, you can automatically build a bridge potentially over things. I mean, it's going to take a long time. I think the estimate was when they started, it's going to take 2 months to cross, like it says a canal. So it doesn't seem like very far, but it could be, you know, a couple hundred feet.
I actually have a lot more respect for bridge building now that I watched the Top Gear special when they went to Burma, where they built the bridge over the River Kwai.
Oh, wow.
But it wasn't the River Kwai, it was the River Kok. And they built it out of bamboo. It's pretty good. They did it.
Engineering is a real thing. I highly applaud people that that can do that. That was actually the statics... involved, the math involved for statics, that was maybe one of my favorite college courses. It was like applied physics, but like it was really just triangle math. Just so much triangle math, just like this is a force, okay, and this is a force. If you split it into, you know, horizontal and vertical degrees, that's how that force is applied, and then that kind of echoes through the system. I just remember having a pretty good head for that. And then as soon as we went into dynamics, it was like, gone, forget it. That's why I don't do physics.
But remember, math is hard.
School and school is a big con. It is there just to expand your mind so you can do the thing you actually are good at, not necessarily the thing you you study.
I actually recently saw Eddie Izzard on a talk show, and he was saying that he went to college and dropped out because he figured that when he got famous, he knew he was going to get famous for doing his comedy, that they might just get him a degree, and they gave him an honorary doctorate. You know, go get your degree, but if you do drop out, make sure you become famous so they give you a degree.
That is an interesting interesting path towards that. I'm going to might have to look into that. Maybe if this podcast gets us degrees, that would be pretty sweet.
I'll take it.
Yeah. I mean, it's already earning us ordinations, right?
I feel like that was independent of the podcast.
Oh, okay.
That was my own personal spiritual journey, Alan. I'd like you not to try and co-opt it.
The dude abides.
Far out.
Well, the coming back to another story that we've talked about on the show was we had brought up a movement to put women on the $20 bill, replace. Whoever's on the $20 bill, because I honestly
Andrew
don't
Jackson.
Remember.
Andrew Jackson, shithead president.
So they're replacing him with a woman on the $20 bill. And interestingly, news came out from the Treasury Department this week that they are going to redesign the $10 bill, which has Alexander Hamilton, if I remember right.
Poor Alexander Hamilton. First he gets shot, now he's getting taken off a bill.
Well, he was on the, I want to say he was on the 20, and then they moved him down or something. I remember reading a thing because they've moved people around to what bills they were on. But in any case, yes.
Not in my lifetime.
No. Certainly not mine either. But Alexander Hamilton is going to lose his coveted spot on the $10 bill, and they're going to redesign it. And the current plan is to put a woman on the $10 bill, which is fantastic. This is like the first time they've changed a picture on a bill in many, many years.
Will still be on the 10. They're talking about doing two different printings. So you could potentially have both.
That's got to make automatic readers real unhappy.
Yeah, you just program in another picture.
The people that program like anti-counterfeiting and stuff are probably not so happy about that decision. But in any case, the $10 bill by, I think it's 2018. I forget what the... It was a little ways away.
Yeah, but you got some time to freak out.
Yeah. they did acknowledge that the campaign had some effect, because the campaign was to replace someone on a bill with a woman in time for the centennial of the 19th Amendment, of getting women getting the right to vote. And so I believe they're trying to coincide with that. So I'm not 100% sure when that is, but that is the plan. They have not decided on a person for that. So let's see who should we nominate.
I feel like we need to form an exploratory committee to make a proper decision. I did do some further research, though, and you're right. There were previous changes to the bills.
Mm.
They were about 100 years ago.
Oh, wow.
They occurred between 1914 and 1928. Andrew Jackson used to be on the 10.
Okay.
And he moved to the 20.
Okay.
Which booted Grover Cleveland from the 20 to the 1,000.
Oh.
Alexander Hamilton went from the 1,000 to the 10.
Oh, that's weird.
And William McKinley took over the 500 from John Marshall and whoever the hell that is. He's just out. John Marshall got hosed.
Well, this will be interesting because it will mean that there will be another non-president on a bill. The other non-president on the bill is the 100. Ben Franklin.
Although if they can stretch it out past 2016, they may be able to throw a woman president on it.
I don't
think they can turn around that fast. But I mean, you at least have the potential for that to happen.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah, not that she's necessarily getting my vote, but
no.
Sanders 2016.
Well, it'll be an interesting set of choices. I'm sure it'll be fraught with controversy, whoever it ends up being. That'll be fun. Yay for changes on our money. If we could only change our money as interestingly as like every other country, it would be pretty cool.
Should put the Hamburglar on the bill. I feel like that's very American.
Robble, robble. as long as it's not like the Zimbabwean dollar. Did you hear about that? That no. Also happened while we were on hiatus. Was the Zimbabwe has decided to scrap their money and just use U.S. dollars because I want to say in the period of like 2007 to 2015, there was so much inflation that they were issuing $10 trillion bills, and $10 trillion is still like 45 cents.
They're broke.
Yeah, they're real messed up. So what was interesting was, as soon as they made that decision, I bought $400 trillion in Zimbabwean money at on eBay. Making it rain.
How much?
It was like $60.
Nice.
Yeah,
it's a pretty good return.
Yeah, I don't know if they'll ever have any, you know, value beyond pure novelty. But
Well, one day they're gonna discover unobtainium in Zimbabwe, and you're gonna be the richest man on the planet.
Yeah, that could be fun. We'll just see how it goes. Maybe I could go and buy a tent for the moon.
You could buy the moon.
Well, maybe I would, you know, rent it out anyway. I would certainly do that. Some news came out of a tent that would in theory be used for when we go back to the moon, whenever that is, hopefully soon. I actually read that the moon is one of the places where helium could potentially be stored. The Chinese were looking at a mining the moon for helium.
What? No.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know.
Not a thing.
Not a thing. But if they go, they could maybe buy tents from us, because NASA, I believe it was NASA, was developing a tent for if you're, you know, camping on the moon on extended trips away from the lunar module or the habitat, however it were set up. But it looks like it's essentially a 2-person tent. And it's got the main distinguishing feature is that it has shielding from cosmic rays.
Important.
You know, it looks interesting because it kind of looks like a, it reminded me of like a burrito. It's kind of, you know, cylindrical and shiny and it's two people kind of sleep side by side in it. It looks like you still have to be wearing your suits, so it's not pressurized or anything like that. But
it kind of looks like an earbud.
Yeah, it's meant to be kind of like an in-place shelter. But what's interesting to me is it, because it's kind of cylindrical, it doesn't look like it's hard to tell what the support structure is. Like I'm trying to think like For every
time, the instructions going to be hard?
Yeah, for every time I've had to, like, you know, put together the tent, you know, when it's raining. Like, you cannot get that tent up fast enough. And I'm wondering if you're out on the moon in the low gravity, how you put that tent together, especially wearing, you know, huge, bulky gloves and stuff like that.
It kind of looks like crappy camping. Or like it's some those people who bring generators to go camping.
Yeah,
because it has to be tied to the rover.
Sure,
like for its oxygen, and it's kind of like a moon tauntaun.
Yeah, it's not car camping; it's rover camping.
Yeah,
yeah. Ah, I think it's still valid. I would is anything to get us back on the moon. I'm fine with. I'm sure, you know, we can work out the details later. I just hope to see that at REI. Maybe I can get it with my my dividend this year. That'd be cool.
So we went to the moon. The last time was 1972.
Mm-hmm.
First time 1969. According to this article, we've only spent 3 days and 6 hours actually walking on the moon.
Wow!
So people have sat in line longer for midnight releases of movies than we have spent as a species on the moon.
Ooh.
That we need to fix that.
Yeah. Well, maybe you know, good camping gear will help. I think you know,
come on, REI, give us some sponsorship money for NASA. NASA needs sponsoring, they need money.
Hashtag moon tent.
Hashtag off Earth.
So one thing that they're going to need off Earth is, if it's any indication, is they're going to need internet access this time around if we send people to the moon. It's certainly been a big deal to have every transmission from the International Space Station and getting, you know, tweets and pictures from the astronauts. It's great. I love space. Let's go there some more. But we have to get internet out there. And so luckily, the EFF produced its list this year of kind of a report card of sorts of a bunch of different internet services and providers and websites. So companies like Verizon and Comcast and Facebook and Twitter and ISPs of all shapes and sizes. And some interesting news came out from that. Brendan went the extra mile and compared those results to last year. And what did you come up with?
So there were companies that got full ranking. Every year they seem to change the number of stars. Sometimes it's four, sometimes it's six. But either way, some companies stayed strong with their full stars. Like Yahoo did very well. They have full stars still. Who's the other one? Sonic, formerly Sonic.net. They still have full stars. Credo still has full stars. But some companies lost them. They don't have your back quite as much as they used to. So Twitter used to be full stars, not anymore.
Huh.
Microsoft used to be full stars, not anymore.
Ooh, what is Twitter lacking on? Because they rate them in terms of, and these are the EFF rankings in terms of like what it isn't like service necessarily. It's more like when the government comes calling for your information, what is that company's policy?
So Twitter lost its star for tells users about government data demands.
Hmm.
So they're not telling people when they're getting subpoenaed by the government.
Interesting.
Microsoft lost 2 stars. They lost their discloses policies on data retention and discloses government content removal requests.
Huh.
Facebook had full stars last year. This year they lost their discloses government content removal request star.
Oh yeah, I mean there was a whole scandal about people who were in prisons and the prisons and the other law enforcement agencies, just essentially sending request after request to remove profiles of people that are in prison without any notice or any kind of holding page or anything like that.
And Google also lost 2 stars for tell users about government data demands and discloses policies on data retention. So there's been some backslide.
Yeah, well, the internet is a wild and woolly place and continues to be. I think the number of government requests will probably only go up as adoption and more use of the internet becomes more widespread. So unchecked by these different providers, it means your data is potentially out there in ways that even you didn't think that it would be. I mean, I think a lot of people are coming to grips with, you know, if I'm giving my information to Facebook, Facebook is probably selling that information to different advertisers, but that information could also be flowing to the government without any transparency. Maybe hasn't occurred to folks quite yet.
I should mention Dropbox and Apple also kept their full stars. So those are, I mean, those are two businesses that a lot of people use.
Yeah. Yeah. Apple was really adamant, actually, in the last the Worldwide Developers Conference. They have a keynote that they publish. You know, even if you're not paying however many hundreds or thousands of dollars it is to be in the room, but one of their big statements was that they don't want our data. So supposedly they're being more mindful of when it pings back to Apple and what the data policy is about, how long that data stays there. I'm still a little skeptical because it is a closed system, but
they probably have so many users out there that the cost of keeping up the servers for tracking all that data is probably not worth it.
Well, the only caveat to that is if there's anything that could come out of the rise of big data and cloud analytics and every other buzzword that's associated with that, is that the cost of dealing with that data is probably moving downwards. And so taking that data and doing something nefarious with it is coming soon.
or maybe they just, Apple doesn't consider any of it the user's data. They just still own everything. It's Apple's. It's in the terms of service. It's all theirs.
It's in that iTunes agreement.
Nothing to give away because it's on themselves.
Yes, it's in that iTunes agreement. You know it, right?
Yep. It's all your data and human centipede.
Well, moving on to a slightly lighter topic is slightly. It's an interesting story out of I want to say it's New York, where they were working. They're working on a project to give people the power of speech back. And so this came about from people who've had brain damage or muscular damage that controls their mouths or their vocal cords. And so finding ways to create speech for those people, or the power of speech for those people, that's not just awkwardly typing or some kind of system like that. They want to be able for a person to think and then have something say something. And so some scientists have put together a thing which they had people read famous speeches, a bunch of famous speeches. I think it was Martin Luther King, "I Have a Dream" speech, and then something from John F. Kennedy, a few other speeches.
Some charmed fan fiction. And not making that up. That was one of the things they had them read.
Oh my God. Okay. All right. Well, they wanted to get a baseline of a dictionary that could be created, and so they had them read those things in their minds. You know, I don't think the people were. I think the people were actually not able to speak them. But what they did was they put electrode sheets in these people's brains. So they were doing surgery anyway, at least the way it was described. They were doing brain surgery anyway, and it was just like, hey, while we're in there, do you mind if we attach electrode sheets to your brain and see if you can read these things, and then we'll just record them and see what happens. And so they took those baseline readings of those speeches, and then had them try and form other sentences that used words from those speeches. And in theory, their system was able to identify some of the electrode patterns that corresponded to certain words. Now, it's not at all the way they describe it. It would be like if people were cheering in a crowd, and you were in a helicopter, and you were over where people were cheering, and you drifted away from them, and you could tell when it was getting louder or not. That is the level of fidelity that they have about what the words were, but it does sound like something that could be plausible. In other words, they could possibly get more data from that. The one really big downside that I alluded to is that they have to put, you know, cut your head open and put electrodes on your brain in order to get this information. So it's
hard
not,
pass.
It's not quite ready for prime time, especially if the level of fidelity is like. I was just saying, you know, not a thing, essentially.
That's what I thought.
But certainly a thing is some news about TV. We don't usually have a lot of stuff to say about TV. Sometimes we do, but usually...
Which is weird considering how much we watch.
Yeah, usually not, but some interesting stuff came out. Starz announced shows coming. I don't think it's this year. I think it's next year. But they have greenlit a series or a miniseries based on the book American Gods by Neil Gaiman. American Gods is an awesome, awesome book.
So good.
Highly recommend really anything by Neil Gaiman. That he's real good. But American Gods specifically was just great. It had a lot of... The premise is that fictional gods from various different you know, religions and myths exist among people and kind of hang out and do stuff. And it's more of a, it's not like they're you know, omniscient or omnipresent or anything. They're just people, and they're kind of doing stuff, and they have a little bit of power, maybe a little bit over people. But it's such a interesting world building, because you know, integrating the different mythologies from the different systems and then kind of mashing them up in a way that sort of makes sense is great. And if you know anything from Neil Gaiman, you know his ability to do that world building and that storytelling is really fantastic. So I highly...
It's going to be on Starz, which has a pretty good track record of making some good shows.
Yeah.
And written and produced by Brian Fuller and Michael Green, who I am a huge fan of both of them.
Mm.
Pushing Daisies, one of my favorite shows of all time. Now that Hannibal's canceled, I guess he can focus on this. they pushed some of the better arcs on Heroes before it got bad.
Real bad.
They were two of the strong forces on that show. Also like that show Kings by Michael Green, which lasted barely a season, but was still pretty good.
Oh,
so I'm definitely hopeful for this.
Yeah.
Please don't fuck this up, Starz. Please. And it seems that Gaiman supports it.
Great.
He's put his support behind the show. So awesome. It's not like they're stealing away the rights or something.
Yeah. That was full approval. Sure. That's gonna be fantastic. I mean, I think it makes us one iota closer to having like a Sandman property on TV or a movie, but we'll see about that. I'm not in a hurry. We can make it.
You don't want to rush it.
Well, something else that I hope we didn't rush too much to get to. We're definitely in spoiler land right now. We're going to talk a little bit about a movie that we both saw over the break. Our break, you know.
Summer vacation-ish.
We both saw the movie Inside Out. And I
assume we both cried like little babies.
It was great. It was great. I actually was already ready after Lava.
Yeah, that was. I was really prepared to be bummed out by that, and it turned it around.
Yeah, I'm like, why? Why am I identifying with a volcano? What are you doing to me, Pixar? Oh my god. Yeah. Although. Ukulele throughout, and it's actually a really, really easy song. So it's three chords, super easy to play. Highly recommend.
I will admit, my first thought while watching that was, Alan is gonna love this.
And you were right. It was great. I looked up the chords pretty much as soon as I got back to the car and had some internet access. I didn't even wait to get home. It was fabulous. So the short kind of put me in the mood for like, all right, my emotions are already ready. Just come at me. And it was great. It was just a really well done and multi-layered just movie about how like your brain works, your mind works. It's not. I mean, it was, it's, you're following these, embodiments of feelings that are in the protagonist's head. Although really the protagonist isn't there so much. It's all just following these embodiments of different feelings, joy, sadness, disgust, rage, and, like caution.
Fear. Yeah. Fear and anger.
Fear, yeah. And it was great. I think, the characterizations of the different feelings was great, and then in amongst that, all of the different little like things about how your mind works and how you remember things and what memories do to shape your personality and how your brain kind of deals with things that you may not need or how it kind of will sometimes pop up stuff that you don't expect. It was great. I think the Pixar did a bang up job pulling that one together.
I'd say it's one of the most original movies I've ever seen.
Yeah. And it has no villain. I think it's
it's great.
I think that's phenomenal, right? It's saying that, you know, there's enough story in this. And enough tension without necessarily having like an antagonist. And I think that's really important. I was just talking with a friend who has a young child, and her whole thing that she's kind of, well, not her whole thing, but one of the things she's worried about with him is that he is already at four forming like, oh, well, is that a good guy or a bad guy? You know, and mm-hmm. kind of putting things into that kind of black and white bucket and trying to, you know, make that not be the dominant kind of way of categorizing thing was important to her. And I feel like this movie is like, great, go see this movie. It's gonna make him like cry, but it's great.
This movie should be required viewing for everybody.
Yeah.
I don't know. It just felt so accurate.
Mm-hmm.
As accurate as it can be with the protagonist being an 11-year-old girl.
Yeah.
But I feel like it was a universal story to childhood.
Yeah. And even if, I mean, and you can watch it from, like I was saying, so many different layers. You can watch it from her point of view. You can see it from, like, how do feelings work? You can see it, how do memories work? How does personality come from memory? How does all that stuff? And they definitely consulted with neuroscience folks and psychologists. There were many thank yous in the credits for that. So, you know, they're not, you know, this isn't pop psychology. They're not making it up as it goes along. They did a fair amount of research to pull it together.
It looks really good. I this might be my new favorite Pixar movie that they've done in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
I'd put up there with The Incredibles or Finding Nemo.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say that Richard Kind stole the movie because everybody was so strong,
mm-hmm.
but Richard Kind as Bing Bong, the imaginary friend, mm-hmm. Stellar.
Yeah.
a lot, very funny, but a lot of feels.
Yeah, definitely. Cool. Well, we have done it. We have recorded a show, and we'll hopefully post to the internet properly and all that good stuff. And we'll be back right into the rhythm for getting folks on the show. Thank you for bearing with us and continuing to listen, continuing to tweet and Facebook, and that's pretty much it. Yeah. So. And Brendan, thanks for you know, a great show. This was good.
We're back.
Talk to you next time.
Till next time, Alan.